Good morning, Tucson. Good morning, Southern Arizona listeners. This is Lydia Aranda, and you are listening to Rainmakers on The Morning Voice on KVOI. It's Monday, April 7th. Today's World Health Day, isn't it, Brendan? We've got Brendan us behind the screen. And we're so excited to have you all listening this morning. Our guest this morning is Mr. Dave Johnson. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Dave is the new executive director, He's been around for a little bit at the Tucson Auto Museum, and we're so excited to have him in studio today. Hopefully take a few calls from car collectors, car enthusiasts, people who are curious about the museum and its history, and we're going to get to all that throughout this morning's conversation on Rainmakers. As you're all hearing, we've got great weather going on. It's April. There's pollen. Anyone who's got hay fever is probably feeling it the last few days with the wind and some of the shift in weather. But we're enjoying this, and I think we're anticipating maybe another record heat. So we're gearing up for that. But that's what we love about Southern Arizona, because you don't have to shovel it. Right, Dave?
That's right.
I understand, Dave, that you actually come, although you've been here in Tucson for a long time in Southern Arizona. And so we call you a native, because I think you just get through a couple summers and you're in, right?
Close enough. I've been here 20 years, so I love Tucson.
Yes, but actually, you're originally from Rockford, Illinois, yes?
I am, yeah, that's right.
Tell us a little bit about what brought you out to Tucson.
Oh, work opportunity. You know, prior to being at the museum, I had a lot of jobs in marketing, and I came here in 2005 to head the marketing efforts for a company called Rainbird that creates irrigation equipment for commercial and residential properties. Mm-hmm. Did that for a long time and stayed in Tucson because I loved it so much.
Fantastic. Well, we're so glad you're here. And when you and I have been talking recently, and of course, I did a little research, looked into your bio, one of the things that kind of caught my eye is the variation of companies that you've been working for. You spoke about Rainbird, mm-hmm. but also Rubbermaid and Sunbeam Oster. So were you in sales or marketing for those companies?
So for those companies, marketing, yeah, okay. I would say a lot of people would say my career is pretty varied. To me, it makes sense. and I had a reason for every move, but I did a lot of marketing, product marketing, you know, developing different products with mm-hmm. the engineers and stuff that customers enjoy. So
that's fantastic. Well, then you went from that to spending a few years at Beacon.
I did. Beacon Group is for those of you that don't know, Beacon Group is a nonprofit here in Tucson that helps folks with disabilities get jobs. Great organization. And
Absolutely.
It was really my introduction to working with nonprofits.
Well, and we sure have a whole lot of them here in Southern Arizona and all around our state doing, providing all kinds of services, and some just really making pathways for others. And Beacon really, really, holds the torch to that. Not to make a pun, but they really do great work.
Yeah, great
and
place.
We love that they get so engaged with other organizations or other initiatives, I should say. My experience with them has been with Thrive in the 05 and some of the ways that really private and public sectors come together around nonprofits and make potential happen and really support the career paths or the learning paths of others.
Yeah. Beacon has been in the 05 for, I think, ever since it was founded in the 50s, and so they're really connected to that neighborhood.
Sure, absolutely. Well, good stuff. So I'm curious, tell us what hooked you into leaving all that great work and going into Auto Museum.
Well, it was just a good opportunity for me. You know, I went from kind of leading just the business side to Beacon to becoming the executive director, so kind of in charge of the whole show over there at the
Sure.
Auto Museum. And I'm such a car nut. It was just a really good fit for me. So I get to use really all my previous skills. You know, I'm going to be doing a lot of marketing for the museum, business management. They're nonprofits, so my experience with nonprofits comes in handy. And again, my passion is just cars. So it just was a really, really great fit for me.
It sounds like it was just a great, absolutely. They say that if you do something you love, then you're really not working a day in your life. However, I have to imagine when you're taking on a new role at all, but then when also the role you're taking on involves moving an entire organization from one long-standing location into another one. That's kind of what's been going on lately at Tucson Auto Museum. Yeah. You're now out on Sabino Canyon Road instead of down on Cherry Avenue. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, the move took quite a while. I wish I could take credit for it, but most of the hard, heavy lifting was done before I even got hired. I just came, you know, to really do, you know, put the finishing touches on things, get the new place open, and we've really been well received over there in the foothills.
That's great. So you came on board as the move was already going on and worked together with Mr. Suarez, your predecessor, who is taking the reins. And really, though, tell our listeners, for anyone who really doesn't know much about it, I mean, the Auto Museum's been around for decades and is really known as the Rolling Art.
Correct. Yeah, it's been around for a while. I'm not even sure what year it started, but it's been around a long time, primarily in that Cherry Avenue location. And, you know, good location, but I think the new location in the foothills is just much more conducive to becoming a really, you know, top-notch attraction for Southern Arizona and Tucson. It's easier to find. A lot more traffic goes by. You know, we're right there by Sabino Canyon, and so many hikers just drive up that road every day, and we hope a lot of people see that we're there and stop in and cool off and see some really great cars.
Well, I've been in there recently with you, and the setup is just phenomenal, and I love how you have different rooms, kind of different themes, and I'm going to imagine there's going to be a whole lot of curating with your team who decide, you know, what to feature at what season, or maybe certain years you might have certain things going on.
Yeah, you know, like you mentioned, we have basically four different salons in the museum, each with a slightly different theme. European cars. We have a great collection of micro cars, I call them, very small cars. American cars, and then what we call our feature room, where there's a little bit of everything, but kind of the most unique cars.
Great. That's fantastic. Well, I'm wondering when, and not so much wondering, but what piques my interest is that when we think about things like history, historic collectibles, cars being one of them, and often require, you know, a little bit of cash or a lot of bit of cash, as the case may be. And it seems like this is some place that's very affordable. You don't have to wait for a once a year car display. Folks can go in and learn a little more history and about the owners that had these cars as well. Some of them celebrities, some of them might have been just very eclectic business folks. Yep. I think you've got some Rockefeller cars. Yep. And some other folks like that. Tell us a little bit about some of the names that have jumped out at you of who have been either car enthusiasts or car collectors over the years that you're displaying.
Well, we've got a couple, as you mentioned. We've got John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s limousine, Cadillac limousine. Only two were made, and I think the Rockefellers bought both of them.
Oh.
So we're proud to feature that car. It's really beautiful, really unique. We've got Jack Benny's Packard, which is fantastic. You know, he ordered it himself. It's probably one of a kind with all the options and things like that. And just the provenance of that is very interesting. Other than that, we've got a lot of cars that people will recognize from TV shows and movies. We've got two Batmobiles there.
Nice.
You know, one from the 1960s TV show and one from the 90s movie.
Uh-huh.
We've got a car that was featured on Mannix, the show back in the 60s. That we've also got a car that was on the Charlie's Angels movie. So
we've got
a little bit of everything. And I'm sure some of our other cars have been owned by, you know, the wealthy folks in the past. But, you know, we like to look at the cars. You know, if we know the provenance, we know who owned it, we try to bring that to the forefront. But there's a lot of surprises in the museum. And, I think people should come in and see for themselves what we've got.
Well, that's great. I think as you were talking about Batman, I think it's really interesting that you have from the 60s, but also the more current movies, mm-hmm. because that's a very different kind of Batmobile.
It
you know
is.
What some of us saw growing up watching the reruns of Batman on TV was going to be exciting, and it was part of the show, and that was all great, but it was a TV car in
right.
that sense.
Yeah, when you see the two cars together, it really just shows you what you know, the different, how the idea of what a futuristic superhero car might look like changed over the decades. And it's just amazing. But I think that 1960s Batmobile just kind of holds up.
Sure.
It's a really cool car, and it definitely is a feature attraction of the museum that people love to see.
Oh, I bet. I think also what really caught my eye is that some of the first generation, like a 1954 first generation Corvette, and some other things, a 48 Comet, I think you have currently in the main area that are spinning, and that's always those are always gleamy and glittery and attract people's eyes and make them think about bygone eras of cars.
Yeah, so that's in our feature room. We've got a big turntable with a couple of cars on there. As you mentioned, the 1954 first generation Corvette, kind of compared to a Comet made in 1948, both two-seat sports cars. One became very successful, the iconic Corvette. One is kind of a footnote in history, but it's one of the most interesting cars in the museum because it's really, well, at this point, one of one. They made two. Nobody's sure where the first one is, really. The museum was lucky enough to acquire this one.
Wow.
Restore it to what it looked like back in 1948. And it's one of the most beautiful cars in the museum and certainly the most unique.
Well, that's wonderful. We're going to take a quick break, but if our listeners are wanting to ask us any questions, feel free to call in. We're at 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk at KVOI. The number is 520-790-2040. You're listening to Rainmakers. We'll be back in a moment. Good morning, and we're back. We're on Rainmakers. This is Lydia Aranda on Monday, April 7th, and we're talking to you this morning with our guest, Mr. Dave Johnson, the Executive Director of the Tucson Auto Museum. Dave, it's so great to have you with us this morning. We've been talking all things cars at the museum.
We have. Great to be here.
It's fantastic to hear so much that's going on that is so easily accessible to the whole Tucson, or really whole Southern Arizona market. I know that we did have a caller call in during the break and was wondering a little bit more about actually hours and whether there's an admission charge and if you have any different kinds of specialties or attractions going on.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, the great thing about the new location is we've expanded our hours and we're now open year-round. So we're going to be open Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Fantastic.
Year-round. There is an admission charge, $15, a standard admission. But we have discounted admissions for military, veterans, first responders, seniors are $12. Then kids and students are $8, and children under 6 are free.
Oh, that's wonderful. So it can really be a very affordable family or group outing. I wonder if you are all thinking about having not just students come with a student rate, but do you do group tours for schools to come out if they have a field day? I don't even know if there are field days anymore. I think there are.
I don't know either. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to find out. But yeah, we do definitely have group tours. We've already, you know, we've only been open about a week, and we've had car clubs come with their group. We're talking to schools and places like the Jewish Community Center are thinking about bringing some kids over there for like a car camp in the summer.
Wonderful.
So we've got a lot of discussions going on that. We've got a great event space there too, where we can host parties and group get-togethers, and they can have access to the museum and see the collection, as well as, you know, conduct their business or have a party or whatever else they want to do.
That's great, and I think that's a wonderful way to really attract collaboration, or maybe, you know, meet with other stakeholders, other community organizations, is letting them know that you have a meeting space there that maybe could be accessible to them. What a fantastic way to, you know, have people come out in a group and other leaders and other business owners.
Yep, we've already had one with the Oro Valley Chamber of Commerce, and it went over great. People really enjoyed having something to do and see in addition to, you know, conducting their networking and their, you know, their business meeting.
And I think there's also a retail store that you have there.
We do. We've got a little gift shop. So, you know, don't leave without a souvenir.
Absolutely.
Remember that visit to the Tucson Auto Museum.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. Have to have some swag, as they
That's
say.
Right. That's right. A lot of cool stuff.
That's wonderful. Well, I wonder as you grow and really just thinking about your background and the kind of organizations that you've worked for, including Beacon as a nonprofit, that it seems to me you're also bringing some opportunity to impart onto others things about workforce and the fact that you're a great example throughout your career journey. You may have been focusing on marketing. I don't know if you studied it all through school or if it was just one of the courses that you took, but it seems like you've been able to use marketing as a transferable skill and apply it to lots of different industries. And it seems like the Auto Museum might offer that kind of opportunity for folks to know that if you're an enthusiast, you can get into leading a museum, you know, a live working museum. If you are someone in marketing or business development, there may be roles to head up organizations, nonprofit or private, as well.
Yeah. So my background is marketing. I went to the University of Illinois, got my degree in marketing, and it's really been a great background that's led me to all my experiences has been very useful. At the museum, you know, we have a very small staff. It's a nonprofit, so we rely on volunteers and donations to kind of keep our mission going, which is to preserve and showcase unique and classic cars. So we do like to give people opportunities. You know, we'd love to have more volunteers at the museum, and you can do many things there. You know, we're looking for docents, you know, people that love cars, that like to talk about cars, because the people we attract, you know, car people are great and they love to talk about their passion. So having docents there that can kind of lead people around and show them what we have, but we need help, you know, at the front desk, you know, selling gifts, you know, maybe helping out our mechanic, fixing cars and, you know, just various projects around the museum. We'd love to have volunteers.
That's awesome. And, you know, what a great experience as a student intern or as someone who maybe just has a little bit of extra time or works a different schedule and is able to dedicate a few hours volunteering. Yeah. And I love what you said, that can even be with the mechanics. And a lot of folks have that skill. You know, really, some people like to tinker, others really that's kind of their full-time gig that they, you know, work on cars and know the intricacies. And when you have historic cars, that's a lot different than contemporary cars.
Sure. And I've even already talked to some students at the University of Arizona, things as diverse as, you know, having media students come in and filming the cars or making interesting videos and things like that. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Do your cars ever go out as, what I want to say, sort of on loan maybe for other organizations that might be having specialty events, like, for example, some other nonprofit in the area might be having their annual gala or their annual event, and maybe they're going to do a theme of something where it might make sense to have, I don't know, the Batmobile, perhaps, or maybe the Corvette or, you know, something like that. If they're having a 1920s theme, then you bring out a 20s car, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, good ideas. I mean, our cars do go out. They're all drivable. And, you know, I was just at a car show at Ventana Golf Club yesterday, and we brought our McLaren there, and
it was
very well received. And, you know, we take other cars out for various shows and functions. So that would be something we would talk about. You know, it's living history, it's living art, and, you know, we want as many people to see it as possible. But of course, we want people to come to the museum and see the whole collection too.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking our listeners, if they have any questions or ideas, this is something to be thinking about as well. And I'd love to hear from some folks. We will, I'm sure, continue to hear even beyond this morning from folks letting us know. Sometimes they call in and drop us an email or let the front desk know that they are a collector themselves. I have a little bit of that collector in my background, believe it or not. Yes, I can't say I'm quite as avid of an enthusiast as you or some of the other folks, but I have been bit by that bug many years ago. Owned a Chevy Impala Super Sport. 1963. Oh, nice. It was a ragtop, and it was all original Honduran maroon with black leather, and it was just a fantastic car, and was wonderful to drive in the spring and the fall. Summer was a little tough.
Summer was a little tough.
We kept it covered up and in a nice cool shaded garage.
So you know the excitement of having a cool car. I mean, I mm-hmm. think it's just great. You know, I think we cater to a lot of different levels of car lovers. You know, you've got your, what I affectionately call, you know, the gearheads who want to know every detail about a car down to what engine is in it, you know, how many horsepower, how do you fix mm-hmm. this, how do you fix that, to, you know, collectors who are just enthusiastic about maybe a certain brand or a car from their childhood brings back memories. You know, we've got several in the museum that do that for me. I see it. And, you know, one of those is called an amphi car, which is actually a car and also a boat. You can drive it right into the water.
Oh, wow.
And it drives around the lake. And I remember as a kid, there was a small amusement park next to my hometown that had a small fleet of these amphi cars, which were made in the 60s. And they would take kids for rides and drive you straight into the pond, and you'd drive around a little bit. But those cars were always broken. So we'd go, and maybe they were working, maybe they weren't, but ours works. And then down to just people who, you know, you don't even have to be a car person. It's just like you mentioned earlier, rolling art.
Right.
And it's just so beautiful to come and see all the different, you know, art deco. And, you know, just I think, you know, years ago, they just put so much more thought into how cars looked. And they're so beautiful.
Yes, the absolute attention to detail of the different colors over the decades, you know, color themes, and whether there's sparkle or not, whether there's, I don't know, I used the word glitter, I'm sure it's not glitter, but all of the different shades from those retro areas to contemporary colors now. So exciting. I'm thinking about the car you just described, and it brings to mind Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Oh, right.
That
right.
You could drive or you could float.
Yeah,
or you
I think
could
it
even
flew,
fly.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting ready to go into our next commercial break, and it's been so exciting. Again, listeners, if you have any questions or comments or want to let us know about your favorite car, give us a call at 520-790-2040. You're listening to Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda, and this morning our guest is Dave Johnson, Executive Director of Tucson Auto Museum. We'll be back after this break. And we're back. This is Rainmakers on Monday morning. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and in studio with me this morning is our guest, Dave Johnson from the Tucson Auto Museum. Dave, we've been talking this morning kind of all things cars and collections and what's attractive about that to other people and what other people might bring to that collection that you're building and continuing to build over at the Tucson Auto Museum. It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
We also have been talking about different career paths.
Yep.
And journeys. Tell us a little more. You and I were speaking on the break and have spoken before about sometimes career paths take us somewhere we didn't anticipate, and we build on each other, build on those different experiences to kind of build a pathway that then later upon reflection makes a whole lot of sense, even if it doesn't maybe at the outset. That's a little bit about how your journey has gone, yes?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You know, I'd say almost the opposite for me, where when I make the move, it seems to make sense. And then when you look back at it in the rearview mirror, I can easily see how people might look at my career and go, well, why did you make that move? But, you know, for example, so my early career was with big corporations doing marketing, certainly different products, but, you know,
It's still marketing.
Yeah, the skill sets are the same. Mm-hmm. And that prepared me well for, you know, just managing business in general. For a short time, I did some consulting and even opened my own business. I decided that really wasn't for me. I like to work for other people. But when it became time to do that again, I really felt like I had maybe completed my journey in the corporate world, which led me to the world of nonprofits. Very rewarding experience with Beacon, and so far even better with the Tucson Auto Museum.
Well, and I think it takes a certain mindset to be able to work in a nonprofit because it is a business. Nonprofits are indeed businesses.
For sure.
And need to function and need to have stability and sustainability, but with a different purpose to not keep all those profits and always reinvest them, but maybe just reinvest a little bit in the staff or in the purpose, in the mission, as we say.
Yeah, well, no money, no mission.
Exactly.
And a nonprofit is a tax status, not a goal, right?
Exactly.
You still need to make money to support your mission. It just doesn't go to shareholders or
right.
owners or things like that. It goes all the, you know, right back into the nonprofit to support your mission. And, you know, there's many different missions out there, and they're all good.
And I love that you say that, because I think there is always a little bit of confusion, a sort of gray, fuzzy area out to the general world if they don't work in nonprofits, and they may misunderstand that nonprofits can be very, certainly I've enjoyed being in the nonprofit world for, you know, over 15 years now in leadership. And so I understand what you're saying. And I do have a corporate background and a public agency background too. So I understand what you're saying. That shift can be, again, a different mindset. But what I enjoy is working with other nonprofits or other leaders for identifying or helping where they might have a gap and how we might fill it. That could be with grants. I'm a grant writer. You are someone who puts your business acumen right into that and says, where do we need resources?
Right.
And resources can be people. It can be volunteers. It can be in-kind. There's so many things that can go into helping a nonprofit be sustainable. And nonprofits are not only about social services. I think that's the other misunderstanding sometimes that's out there. They can be wonderful museums like the one you're running.
Exactly. Again, in my Beacon Group experience, certainly a wonderful organization. It helps a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The museum is also a nonprofit, but not social services, but still a very important mission of educating, you know, preserving these cars, preserving a part of history.
Yep.
And, you know, while grants are great, you know, like you pointed out, nonprofits are businesses. And I think the best situation for a nonprofit is if you can create an environment that self-funds the nonprofit, hence, you know, the admission charge to the museum.
Sure.
And
or the retail store.
Exactly.
Or being able to maybe rent out or for some sort of remuneration, be able to have that meeting space that you talked about, which when I was reading in one of the recent articles, I mean, that's just not a small meeting space. That can fit up to 120 people.
It can, yep.
That's a pretty significant size meeting space, of which there are not that many of those all around the greater Tucson area. So what a great opportunity.
Right. And then to be able to hold your event in that environment around those beautiful cars
mm-hmm.
and enhance it like that, I think is just really going to be a great resource for the community.
I love the education piece that you talked about. I'm the daughter of teachers, and education, whether formal or the informal information sharing, you know, all of it is learning. And I think as we grow in our lives and as we get in throughout our careers, we have opportunities to just learn something new, and apply whatever other experiences we've had. Sounds like you're doing that a lot in your journey.
Yeah, for sure.
Good. That's so great. So to let folks know, you are open, you and your organization are open to bringing volunteers in, and they can be of various ages, 18 and older or 16 and older?
No, 18 and older.
Okay.
And regardless of what you think your interest is, you know, we can probably match your interest to your skill set and our needs, and we would love to have more volunteers. Again, an integral part of nonprofits, right? So we've got some great ones already, but we're always looking for more, especially now with our expanded hours. Like I said, being year-round and 5 days a week now, we're always looking for hours to fill.
That's great. So tell me a little bit about some of the rest of your team. I know it's a small team.
Yes.
Have some of them been around since the beginning of the Tucson Auto Museum, even in its old digs, or are they all fairly new?
A little bit of a mix. You know, you had mentioned Atten Suarez, my predecessor. He was our interim executive director. Great guy, but he had come from the volunteer side.
Oh, okay.
And he was one of our great volunteers. And when the move happened, they happened to be in between executive directors, so he kind of volunteered to kind of step up and help with the move, and did just Herculean tasks, in my opinion. He did a great job. But ultimately, he wants to be a volunteer. He's retired.
Uh-huh.
He wants to be go back to being retired and be a volunteer. So we've got a good staff of volunteers like Mr. Suarez. But as you mentioned, our staff is small. I've got a full-time mechanic. I've got an event planner who helps with that great event space. And Rhonda Knott, she can make your party fantastic or your business meeting fantastic.
Good to know.
And
make sure that people remember Rhonda's name when they call you up and want to do something there.
Yep. And then, you know, just a little bit of help on the back end with bookkeeping and things like that. But it's a small team, and we're very close. And I think we do a lot with the size of the team we have.
That's great. Well, let me ask you this also. So cars and car shows and car clubs, you know, it's a certain interesting ecosystem. And many of those organizations exist in different parts of certainly the greater Tucson area, but really all over Arizona. So where does the Tucson Auto Museum fit in to a relationship with some of those others? Like, are you colleagues with some of the actual local car clubs? Do you participate at a national level with other car enthusiasts or associations?
Yeah, really all of the above. We just opened, but we've already had a couple of car clubs come, and I'm still kind of feeling that out. Like, I'm surprised how many there are. You know, just yesterday at the museum, we had the Rolls-Royce Club of Arizona there.
Oh, wow. I didn't know there was one. That's
I know.
Great.
I didn't either. And just a string of Rolls-Royces pulls into our parking lot at 10 o'clock, and they're just beautiful, beautiful cars from as far away as New Mexico.
Wow.
And we've had other clubs. We've got the British Car Club coming a little bit later this month.
Oh, wow. That should be exciting.
Yeah, and in terms of national...
It's just their team is coming?
Like a whole club event. So I guess they drive around to different garages and collections throughout the town. It's just like a weekend event. So they're going to start with us. You know, probably 40-some cars of, you know, British origin. And they'll look at our museum and then... move on to, you know, they like to drive around in their cars, of course.
So. Oh, of course.
Yeah.
But on the right side of the road.
Yeah, exactly. right. And in terms of beyond Tucson and Southern Arizona, yeah, I mean, we participate. It's a small industry, but it is an industry. So we belong to, you know, the National Auto Museum Association, which there is one.
Yes.
Because almost every town has at least one auto museum if you're a good sized town. And some of our cars have been shown, you know, at some of the most prestigious places in the world. That Curtis Comet that we were talking about has been at Pebble Beach, which is the most prestigious car show in the world. You have to be invited. And, you know, it's just great to see people appreciate our vehicles like that.
That's great. Well, we're about to take another break. So listeners, come back and hear a little bit more from Dave Johnson, Tucson Auto Museum. You're listening to Rainmakers. And we're back. This is Rainmakers, and we're listening to a little bit of Fleetwood Mac. As we are coming back into our studio on this Monday morning, April 7th, today is World Health Day. We're having a lovely, lovely weather day here in Southern Arizona. There is some traffic that's kind of holding some folks up, so I hope you're enjoying our conversation while you are getting to or from your destinations. Hopefully drive safely, keep those seatbelts going, and pay attention to the road. I'm Lydia Aranda, and I'm your host for Rainmakers, and this morning we've been speaking with Dave Johnson. Dave, thank you for being here this morning to talk all things auto museum, but also all things in a varied career. Love hearing about your journey, and it's so great to have you here today.
Thank you.
And for our listeners, first, I also want to give a shout out to Brendan Cast, who's behind the glass and keeping us on track and doing a great job.
It's almost Brendan Kraft.
I'm sorry. See, there I go, not looking at my notes, Brendan. I apologize
that's okay.
You're being crafty this morning.
I'm trying to be.
Keeping our cast of characters going in full swarm. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's wonderful being here on The Voice, and we've been talking this morning not only about things that happen with cars and collectibles and how a museum transfers from one location to another, but also the workforce that goes involved with that. So even though it's a lean, mean staff that you've got going on to help your nonprofit go steadily and roll smoothly, Dave, we were also speaking right before the break that within workforce, there's a lot to be thinking about with transferable skills, and that many different folks can apply themselves and really find some great pathways at something like the Tucson Auto Museum.
Right. I think it's a great way to give back to the community. You know, when you've had a career and you've developed these skill sets, to be able to go to a place like, and there's many other ones, but certainly the Tucson Auto Museum welcomes that. And we've got a lot of great volunteers that have done wonderful things throughout their career and varied things, and they just bring all that energy and that skill set to the museum, and it just makes it a better place for everybody. And, you know, nonprofits, you know, donations and grants and all that stuff we talked about, but really the heartbeat is the volunteers too.
And it sounds like that's also something that's been really exciting for you throughout your own personal journey, your own professional journey. Choosing to study marketing is no easy feat. I mean, there's a lot that goes into really the whole craft, as we were talking earlier, craft of marketing. It is paying attention to not only what a product is, but really what the uses that can go on with that product, how you're going to not just display and place and not just about sales, but really about what the purpose of that product is. And that's very transferable into leadership at a nonprofit because it's mission driven.
Exactly. I mean, you mentioned products, you know, certainly, you know, to me, one of the main things, you know, sometimes when people think about marketing, they think about just advertising. You know, my career gets into enhancing the user experience, whether that's helping design a product that users can use and use easily and have the feature set that they want, to an experience like the Tucson Auto Museum, where we make it about the visitor, you know, something that they want to see, something that flows, and you know, cars that they want to see. So making it all about the user experience, and that's all marketing.
It really is. And I like that you mentioned the difference between, you know, marketing. Sometimes people only think about the advertising part, which is very important. Of
it
course,
is.
Accurately advertising,
yep, it is,
has
for sure.
This show, the morning voice. But it is really only one aspect of the whole big picture. We are about to go into yet another break here. But when we come back, we're going to continue to talk about the various industries that make a nonprofit successful.
Great.
Good morning, it's Lydia Aranda. I am so happy to be with all of you this morning. It's Monday, April 7th, and we're having a lovely Southern Arizona weather day, lovely spring day. And I've been speaking this morning with Dave Johnson. Dave, thank you for being our guest today on Rainmakers. We've been talking about all things auto museum, all things career path, and just how wonderful it is to work in community.
Yeah, for sure. It's been great. I appreciate it.
And as we were approaching the last break, we were talking a little bit about how workforce comes into play, education comes into play, whether someone's in a for-profit corporation, a for-profit small business, working in a public agency, or certainly in nonprofits, that all of those things swirl together to make a sustainable project, a sustainable initiative, and a successful business.
Yeah, for sure.
And marketing plays a big part of that.
It does.
No matter what somebody's doing, we want to be able to kind of apply those things that we learn along our journey. And those can be things that we've learned in our formal schooling or maybe just other experiences that we've had, and mentors. What do you think about mentorship, especially in the lines of work that you've been in?
Well, I've been lucky to have, you know, some very good mentors in my time. And you know, I love to gain from that experience. I think some people maybe kind of block that out and think they, you know, I learned that in school and they don't listen. But I would encourage everybody to, you know, absorb the opportunity to have a mentor if you have one in your life. I had one very early on, a guy by the name of Steve Hemingway is no longer with us, but he taught me so much about marketing early in my career, and I've just carried that along. And at every job I've had, there, you know, there's people that, you know, that teach you new things that you just don't know. And I'm still experiencing that to this day after almost a 40-year career. So
that's great. And, you know, I love hearing people's personal experiences with folks who they believe have not only mentored them, and mentoring can be such a big word, but I often find that a really good mentor is actually your champion. When you don't know, or you may not be in a room where conversations are taking place, they're actually in there championing your cause or advocating for you and really having your back, or they're watching from afar. And when you approach them for advice, or sometimes not even asking them for advice, they may be there to be that sounding board. Many times they're in the same industry that you know, a mentor is in the same industry as their protege, but not always. Sometimes it can just be someone who is trusted and informed and experienced and can help help kind of be those guardrails as you're going along.
Yeah, and I try to give back. You know, after a long career, I not only continue to try to find my own mentors, but I've had the great opportunity to, I hope, be mentors to other people. And a big part of that is making sure they're successful. You know, I bear a big responsibility when I have people work for me, and I want to see them successful, and I want to continue to do that at the museum. You know, as we said, we've got volunteers, but I've got a small staff, and I want to see them thrive and become the leaders, you know, the future leaders of the museum, if possible.
So important. And having role models, like I said, I think you are a great example of a role model of someone who's been able to really hone his own skills, pay attention to the environment around him, use those transferable skills as you hop industries or just change opportunities and build upon those. And now you're executive director of the Otto Museum. Maybe something you hadn't really anticipated. Certainly executive director, I'm sure you're not surprised at that, but that it would be of an Otto Museum might be the new kind of detail.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, surprises pop up in your career, and I think you've got to kind of follow your gut and go with something that just feels right. And that's always been what's happened to me. You know, a lot of opportunities kind of show up, and sometimes just some pop out and go, that one just feels right. And it's always served me well in my career. And, you know, I look forward to this next chapter for sure.
That's wonderful. I know that as this hour of the show continues, we're going to be joined by an additional guest. His name is Larry Stark, and he's the board president of another nonprofit, Tucson Juneteenth Festival. And also, Larry has background at Pima Community College and at the U of A. And he, too, just like what you said, has not only benefited from folks being good role models and mentoring to him, but he really gives back in the community as well. And even though these two nonprofits, the Tucson Otto Museum and Tucson Juneteenth Festival, are seemingly in different focuses, they're really not that far apart because they are also about tapping into celebration of culture, tapping into opportunities for youth and retired folks, and really being an opportunity for our greater Tucson area, our southern Arizona, even our whole state of Arizona, to be able to come together around a project, an initiative, a celebration. And it's really wonderful to see different groups come together in community.
Yeah, for sure. You know, during the break, I heard, you know, 7 million visitors to Tucson. You forget that sometimes.
Yes.
And I think anything we can do to continue that tourism angle and attraction to Tucson, including Juneteenth and the museum, and there's so much that kind of interplays with each other.
Absolutely. It is very important that here in Southern Arizona that we keep that tourism going. And also, as tourism evolves, tourism is not always the same way that it was decades ago, where an entire family gets in a car, drives to some location, maybe stays at you know, a bed and breakfast or a smaller hotel, although
campground.
We have campgrounds, and although we have so many of those kind of options here in Tucson, we're really very lucky with our boutique hotels that are close to downtown and in some of the historic areas. Certainly on Miracle Mile, there used to be so many of those that many of those have turned into restaurants or small businesses or something for Gem Show.
Yeah, and a lot of the ones on the I-10 corridor there kind of to the south have been revitalized lately, mm-hmm. which is great to see. So it's good to see Tucson grow, you know, including the museum grow and improve and, you know, keep doing things that will continue to attract people to the area.
Yes, and of course, we're famous for our gastronomy and our 12 miles of Mexican food. And also, I think a lot about the what I want to call the dude ranches and the very historical locations and places that have really built up that kind of experience here, surrounding kind of on the outskirts in Marana and very in far east of edges of Tucson. And speaking of all of that, the Tucson Otto Museum is located inside a building that previously, many, many decades ago, was
It was the Hidden Valley Inn.
Yes.
And even though I've been here for 20 years and kind of feel like a native, that precedes my time. But as I talk about, you know, our new location, and people are like, where is that? And I mention, oh, well, it's the old Hidden Valley, and so many people light up and remember that, and it's part of Tucson history. And we have a couple little elements in the museum to remind folks of that that past as well. And we've gotten comments on that already.
I bet. And that's kind of an interesting, I think, kind of blending that in, that motor in, if you will, yeah. to what's going on with the cars. It sort of seems like a natural progression, maybe.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just great to be in a building that has that history and a location that Tucsonans can identify with. So we've got something for locals, we've got something for tourists, and everybody, really. And as I said before, you don't have to be a car person to enjoy what we have to offer there. It's just nostalgic and beautiful and art and fun. It's just a great atmosphere there.
Wonderful. Again, students or younger people who might be just wondering what kind of pathway might lead them into a career in museums or a career in car preservation or any of those things, so many different angles they can explore, marketing, community development, or excuse me, community engagement, I might say, history, local history as well as national, the auto industry and all the transformations that have taken place in technologies for cars.
I think lots of stuff. Yeah, I think that's one of the most pleasant surprises I've had, you know, getting to know the museum industry in particular in just the short time I've been there, is the number of career pathways that can lead you there. All the ones that you mentioned and many more. I mean, and it's just such a great thing to be part of preserving history, whether it's cars or art or natural history or whatever. Museums are an important part of our culture and our community.
Yes, and you mentioned the art part. The art is not only perhaps in the, kind of the artistic design that cars, the vehicles have gone through over the decades, you know, the streamlined and shapes and all those kinds of things, but also the little extras that, you know, the chrome and other kinds of add-ons, if you will, that make the exterior or interior attractive to certain folks, you know, of different tastes. You might like more wood paneling, or you might like more leather seats, or something big, or something trim. All of those things, somebody has to design those, and an engineer has to make sure that it functions well in a tech, you know, on the technology side. Somebody needs to make sure that you can put the aesthetics together with a function.
Yeah, and it ultimately has to be something that consumers want, right? Mm-hmm. I think one of the most interesting things about some of the cars in our collection illustrate, you know, people have heard about like the Tucker, for example. We don't have a Tucker, but I think we have even more unique cars where somebody had this vision, like, I'm going to make this car that is the new best thing and people are going to love it. And it just doesn't hit, right?
It just might not.
Yeah, and so we've got one like in our collection called the Davis, and it's back from the 40s where a guy in California, Davis, thought he designed the best new car, and it just never took off, and they ended up making like 17 of them, and maybe a dozen still exist, and we have two of them. And just to see that, we've got an old commercial for that car running on, you know, some of our big screens there.
Oh wow.
And just to see how they were approaching the market, and then to see the car right next to it, it's just incredible.
That's wonderful. Well, we're about to go into another break. I know that Brendan is teeing us up for our next commercial break, so we will be back shortly. And when we come back, Dave, you'll still be in studio with us, and we're going to be welcoming another guest, Mr. Larry Stark. So stick with us, Rainmakers on The Morning Voice. And we're back. Thank you for being with us this morning, Monday, April 7th. I am Lydia Aranda, and I am your host on Rainmakers. Rainmakers is part of the Morning Voice weekday positive talk radio show on KVOI here in Tucson. And it's been so exciting this morning. We've been talking with Dave Johnson, the executive director of Tucson Auto Museum. Dave, thank you again for spending your morning with us today.
You're welcome. It's been great.
And we're also welcoming an additional guest, the fabulous Mr. Larry Starks. Larry, how are you today?
I'm doing great on a beautiful Monday morning. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So folks, if you don't know, Larry Starks is the president of the board of the Tucson Juneteenth Festival, has been in that role for quite some time, has some family history with that organization. But I'm also going to tell everybody who may have missed it that last Thursday was the Social Venture Partners Tucson annual Fast Pitch, in fact, the 10th annual Fast Pitch. Larry was one of the cohort members who got to deliver his pitch, received lots of different funding, and then topped it all off, Larry, with an exciting and surprise monetary gift that came from Arizona Complete Health, a $100,000 endowment. Congratulations to you.
Thank you so much. It was a surprise. It was, it's really life-changing for what we want to do with the festival and what we need to do with Arizona and Tucson, and definitely wasn't expecting it.
I think none of the audience was expecting it.
Yeah, I was trying real hard not to bring tears in, but it couldn't help it. It was there. So, yeah, it was great.
Well, for any of you who are listening that may have been there, you saw the excitement in that room. And I was there, and I witnessed, again, the excitement that was coming from all of the folks in the audience, the funders that were there to share some money, the cohort, eight people in the cohort. You were a cohort of eight for 2025. And for anyone who doesn't know, Social Venture Partners of Tucson, and I got to say, earlier last month, we did an interview here on Rainmakers with Ann Miskey, the new CEO. And she was so excited to be part of this 10th anniversary of Fast Pitch. Fast Pitch is about helping leaders like yourself, you, Dave, you, Larry, and so many others who on a day-to-day role in their nonprofits are doing the work that needs to be done, know the story, know who your stakeholders and your constituents are, and you do know your pitch. But Fast Pitch is an opportunity that for several months allows you to hone in, tighten up, and maybe amplify or even create a new pitch. Am I right with that? And what else can you tell us about Fast Pitch, Larry?
That is correct. And it's a way for me as a nonprofit, really just to get your name out there. You know, for me, the marketing, even, you know, with the endowment, everything else like that, you know, me sitting here having this conversation, you know, people looking now at the website, people asking questions about what it is that we do, what can we do. That has been priceless for me, even more so than the sponsorship. So, you know, when I gave my pitch, people said, oh my God, you've been here for 55 years? Yeah, we have. And it's like just that alone is more than the effort of everything we've had to put in for Fast Pitch, because there's a lot of work. You know, no yep. doubt about it. It's a lot of work, but it's definitely, definitely worth it.
And with Fast Pitch, you actually spend, is it weekly or certain amount of days monthly for a succession of like 4 months going through classes, I want to say, being taught, getting some training and getting up on stages and getting in different environments where you practice your pitch and you hone your pitch and you change your pitch, almost like creating a new script.
Yeah, definitely. It was... Again, you know, we started in January. Well, actually, we started last year with just getting ready. And then in January, it's like, okay, now let's hit the ground, let's start. And you get lots of feedback.
And feedback from, this is a word that Dave and I were talking about earlier, mentoring and mentorship. You get feedback from past cohort members, alumni of the program, but also professionals who are in the business of developing business.
Exactly.
And they give you that feedback and they act as mentors to you. Is that correct?
That is correct. You know, we have our own private mentors, so to speak, you know, who work with us daily, listen to our pitch, you know, people who we can call, you know, man, I'm not feeling this right now, or how is this feeling? And, you know, just people who are professionally in the business, Aaron Henney and some others, who are like, okay, let's sit down. What is it that you want to say? Here's how you're saying it, and here's what I hear. Are you really trying to say what I'm hearing? And so that's really been important, just to have that sounding board, you know, for others to make sure that my words are getting out and I'm giving the information that I really want to give.
That's fantastic. And before we go too much deeper into that, I want to hold for a moment and kind of switch gears. Let's let the audience know, let's let our listeners know, for anyone who may not be familiar with Tucson Juneteenth Festival, tell us about that.
Well, the festival began actually in 1970 when it started, actually even before that, you know, when people who came here from Texas, you know, where Juneteenth is largely celebrated. So as people moved out of Texas, you know, they still wanted that celebration, you know, where they were at. So a small group of families, you know, up on a mountain, they started saying, hey, let's just get together for a potluck to, you know, remember Juneteenth for what we used to do at home. And it grew from there, you know, and it grew so much that they had it. Then they started having it in a park over on a mountain. You know, I remember growing up, I grew up on Juneteenth. So my brother was a part of Juneteenth for over 25 years. He ran it for like 15 years. So when I was 5 or 6 years old, I remember, you know, going to the parks, listening to the bands, eating the food, listening to, you know, smelling the barbecue and all these things. You know, so it's been a...
You're making my mouth water.
Oh, my God. If you come out to the festival, you're going to be more... You're going to be like walking around with plates of food. Like, where else can I go? Like, just sit down, enjoy this, and come back for some more. So, and people understand it's a community celebration. Mm-hmm. You know, what I tell people is when you come there, you see what Tucson community can be at its best.
Yes.
When there's nothing, no worries, no qualms, no whatever it might be, you just come there and celebrate with everybody in the community. We understand what it's about, but I also, you know, and I tell my board members, we can't educate people if they're not around us. We have to bring them around to educate them to understand what Juneteenth really is, you know, the importance of it.
First, develop the relationship, like you said, connect right. with stakeholders, connect with potential stakeholders and folks who want to learn more, be able to identify with some aspect about what you're celebrating, or want to be sure to support going forward, because as you say at Tucson Juneteenth Festival, it's not a moment, it's a movement.
Exactly.
And I may have that backwards. Maybe it's a movement, not a moment.
It's a movement, not a moment. Not, thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. I've been paying attention to that because it's so, and in fact, Dave and I were talking earlier, weren't we, Dave, about tourism and tourism being one thing, history being another part of what attracts people to Southern Arizona, and being able to hit on the different kinds of things that are going to give interest of folks to come who may not live here, but even the folks that are already here. There are so many best kept secrets, as we like to say, and gems and jewels of initiatives and projects and programs that are going on that can really help the greater good and get people involved. We need people to be engaged. We need people to understand each other and to come together. And these are some of the ways they can do it around the history of cars and transportation and tourism in our lovely Southern Arizona. Right, Dave?
That's right.
I think that's kind of the things that we were talking about.
Yep.
And being able to then also pull together around various cultures, and we have so many here. It's such a diverse community here in Tucson. So I think that is those are just some examples. Mentoring is another thing we were all talking about that is a mission, no matter wherever we are, whatever nonprofit or business we're in. Being able to help others develop. And that's something that seems to be very important to you personally as well as professionally, yes?
Oh, definitely. I mean, and not just mentoring in the way of, you know, I've been working in the youth field for a long time, mm-hmm. as a juvenile parole officer, administrator, currently working with juvenile court with the Cape School, you know, and mentoring take on a lot of different forms. You know,
sure.
People hear that word and it's like, oh, well, let me grab a kid and take him to the park and play basketball. Well, that's not kind of like what mentoring really is.
No, that's spending time, which is really good.
Time.
That's
yeah.
being able right. to get some attention and start to build a relationship.
Right, it's a part of it, but that main thing is really building that relationship, that trust that a person has in you that knows that they have somebody there to support them. Mm-hmm. And that's the mentorship that in the legacy program that we're really trying to create with these young men and masculine-identified youth is that trust.
That's great. Well, when we come back, we're going to take another break right now. When we come back, I want to do a little deeper dive into some of those programs, especially for the young men. So you're listening to Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and we are speaking this morning with Larry Starks of Tucson Juneteenth Festival. Hello, you are back. We are back. We're all together now on Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda, and it is Monday, April 7th. Today is World Health Day, and in studio with me today, speaking about things that help make healthier communities as well as healthier people, I have Larry Starks, board president of Tucson Juneteenth Festival, and also one of the big winners of SVP's Fast Pitch 2025 that just occurred at the Fox Theater last week. Larry, great to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's a blessing to be here. Thank you.
We were speaking before the break a little bit about all kinds of different aspects of Juneteenth, what it is, how it has operated over the years, but there are so many more things to discuss with it. I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about some of the programs and projects and initiatives that have come out of Tucson Juneteenth, as well as the partnerships that you have. One that comes to mind for me is your relationship with Boys to Men and the kind of leadership and mentoring. We've been talking about mentoring a lot today. Talk to us about that and what aspect that has for Juneteenth.
Yeah, so what we, in partnership with Boys to Men, as well as Goodwill of Southern Arizona and Emerge Center Against Domestic Abuse, we looked last year to see how we can incorporate, they have talking circles, you know, with Boys to Men, and we had some of our young men involved in that. And I was a part of the groups, and another few of my board members was a part of, and they said, you know, we really need to expand this. And so this is where we created the Legacy Museum, and a few of our members had been to the Legacy Museum in Montgomery, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew how important it would be for these young men to actually see that and what it is, and then understand with that the worth that they have. And so we created the program and the curriculum. You know, for 8 weeks, we dive into self-responsibility, determination, education, history. And then at the end of that, we take them to the Legacy Museum in Montgomery. And so it's, if you haven't been...
As a group, you take a group of the young men and chaperones together for like a trip, a summer trip, if you will.
Well, it's not, I mean, it's, and what I say, and when, even in my pitch, I tell people that it's not a field trip. It's really about personal growth and understanding, you know, where you came from and why we expect you to do and behave in certain ways. This is why we want you to do certain things. It's not just because it's okay to do. It's because here's the history that we need you to understand and why you do things and why you don't do things. You know, so that legacy trip is, when we go, we sit back and then we analyze and we have them take in what they just seen and what they felt,
mm-hmm.
you know, every day. So what this endowment does, though, for us is the last time we went, we were only able to spend like a day and a half. And this is like a really a 3-day experience at minimum to really take it in and process what it is.
Sure.
So what this allows us to do is get these young men and their mentors. And now we're like, you know, the mentor like, well, I want to go. Everybody wants to go because they see it. And they feel it, you know. So that's really what that legacy. And then when they come back now, we have the expectation that you're going to be a mentor to these others who are coming through so they can understand the importance. And it's really just trying to create some generations of healthy young men to give back to the others and not just, you know, old people like myself, we can sit back, and just kind of relax and let the younger people kind of, you know, mentor each other as well.
Well, first of all, you're not old, but you are seasoned. You are maybe a little more experienced. All of us around the table have had some, we're a little bit longer in tooth than others.
Right.
But that's exciting. And what I really am thrilled to hear about with this endowment that you received from Arizona Complete Health is that it will allow you to have some of that seed money to make sure that every year you can have a legacy trip, but over time, maybe even have that matched with other funders or whatever kinds of things. You know exactly how to do that, and you and your team do a great job of that, but this just gives you that little step up that's going to allow you to do more and be able to create more alumni who then amplify the touch, the reach, the purpose, and keep your mission alive.
Right.
And we were speaking earlier, Dave, you and I were talking about nonprofits. Businesses are still a business. Organizations, they still have to think with business acumen and therefore need to have revenue streams, need to make sure that things are sustainable, projects are sustainable, because without money, there's no mission. I love that you said that earlier.
For sure, yeah.
And museums are important. Sometimes they may be about items and trends and the history of an industry as well as our behavior in the U.S., as with the Auto Museum. And other things are about a pathway of people. And that's what I hear you talking about, Larry, with the legacy. So important. And often people don't think about the fact that that there is a large group coming out of Southern Arizona year after year after year that are actually connecting back on that legacy trip.
Yeah, and there's so many connections, and, you know, like, again, with the education piece, is there's so many connections for, you know, Juneteenth and the history and the different areas here, not just in Tucson or Southern Arizona, but Mexico and Louisiana and all these other places. And that education just gives them also, you know, understanding we're not, you know, you're not just a monolith. You're not just here for today. You
right.
know what I'm saying? It's
exactly.
a lot of, it's a lot of history that comes with that. So that
from whence we've come.
Yeah, that gives us a lot of opportunity. Like I said, you know, with the endowment, you know, one of the things I set out when I became president years ago is how can we sustain what we want to do for the next 10 years? And that's really what this creates for us, is that opportunity to do that. Because, you know, I'm sure, Dave, you can understand, if you don't have that, you know, seed, that start, you can't always start from zero every year. As a 501c3, it doesn't pan out well.
Or it's ideal not to. Sometimes you have to, but yes, that's not the ideal. You want to have a little bit in your coffers each time.
Right, because we all have goals and we all have ideas that we want to sustain every year. For example, with the festival and Juneteenth, there's three really strong programs that we do every year. One is, of course, is a festival.
Mm-hmm.
The second is our Gospel Jubilee. We make sure that happens. And the third, this is our third year, is at the Loft Theater. We started 3 years ago with what's called The Making of Black America. And
Like a film festival or a film showing?
It's a film festival and it's a panel. It's a panel discussion, really is what it's about. You know. And then last year we had, you know, being a black teen in Tucson. So we had young people talking about what that's like for them. This year is going to be being a black woman in Tucson.
Nice.
So we're going to get a great panel together. It really is just about having discussions, you know, around that, and a lot of just so people can, you know, talk about what that means. And a lot of times, even for our, you know, men's healing space, it's really just about having conversations that we don't usually get to have. You know what I mean? So that's really what's important for us, not to walk around with the chip on your shoulder, whatever it might be, but to be able to, just for anyone, just to be able to talk about certain things.
Sure.
Because, I mean, even as a husband, as a man, you know, there's certain things you can and cannot talk about at home sometimes because you don't want to, you know, ruffle feathers. You know?
Well, I think what I have found, it seems to me from listening to many other community leaders and faith-based leaders and educators, that no matter where you go, really that conversation, that two-way conversation of being able to share but also to listen, is important, even if it doesn't lead to immediate action.
Right.
I mean, it's great when things lead to action, and there are some venues or some settings or some projects that we, or initiatives, I should say, where we need to get together, inform each other, and then there's an action that needs to be taken. But there is value in the sharing and the listening, and I dare say that in our fast-paced world, often we don't pause to listen deeply and then think about whatever it is that's being shared and maybe not comment on it right away, but just take it in and listen to it. And it's definitely something that we're not often teaching in our schools because school curriculum has changed so much. And again, it's fast-paced. Our youth are going through so many things they have to get done in a day and in a year, and homework and all these other kinds of things, that to be able to just create spaces. I love the idea of talking circles. I've seen them work, especially for men and then for youth, for young adults, to have their own kind of talking circles are really viable. We're about to go to another break here. You're listening to Rainmakers, and I'm so thrilled as your host, Lydia Aranda, to be having Larry Starks from Tucson Juneteenth Festival in this last half hour. We will be back in just a moment. Brendan, take us away. And we're back. This is Rainmakers. I'm Lydia Aranda, and we are with you this morning on The Morning Voice at 10:30 a.m. KVOI. And we've been speaking this morning on World Health Day, Monday, April 7th, with our guest Dave Johnson, the Executive Director of Tucson Auto Museum, and also Larry Starks, the President of the Board of Tucson Juneteenth Festival, and big winner at SVP Tucson's Fast Pitch 2025. Larry, we were speaking before the break about all the different initiatives and the way that you really look at Juneteenth and in many other organizations with all your partnering organizations, many of which you serve on their boards as well. So you've been a really big connector there. About the importance of being able to have opportunity to speak and to listen, and that through some of these efforts, whether they are events, programs, initiatives, or ideas, that really it affects in a positive way the goal of building a plan for Tucson Juneteenth Festival about involving community. That the end of the day, the beginning of the day, in the middle of the day, it's all about involving community. Otherwise, things are just too fragmented. So it sounds like that really has been a solid theme for not only you and your board, but really also the stakeholders and sponsors that you've had over the years.
That is true. And again, you know, with community, as I was just, you know, talking to Dave about is, we can't educate you on Juneteenth if I don't have you in front of me or I'm not talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a crowd of people at the festival, at the Jubilee, at the Loft, whatever it might be, you know, I'm invited out to different organizations, you know, because of what we're doing. I can now educate you about the importance of Juneteenth and how you can contribute to make it better, you know, how you can be a part of that movement, you
right.
know. So that's the main key is, you know, it's not, you know, I've had people call me and say, oh, you know, I have a black child that I've adopted. Is it okay if I come? Well, I don't want people to have to ask that. I want people to know that they can come. Come be a part.
Right.
Come bring.
And
bring,
it's for everybody.
It's for everybody.
This is about Tucson or
this
greater
is about
Tucson
Southern Arizona.
As a greater community.
My ideal is to eclipse anything that Phoenix is doing, of course.
I think that's a theme I hear from all kind of Southern Arizona organizations. But yes, we have our own community, our own style, our own feel, our own personalities right. here in Southern Arizona. And we are part of this great state, right. but we're also part of this wonderful Borderlands region that really goes from San Diego all the way to El Paso and further down in Texas.
Right.
And Tucson, even though it's not sitting on the border, Tucson really has a lot of influence and impact to the border region as well as from the border region, I
right.
think. And all the communities that surround us in Santa Cruz County, Cochise County, Yuma County, and even out on the east side of, you know, Greenlee and Graham, we really have a lot going on. And I think both Dave, you spoke earlier, and Larry, you're speaking about also the impact that comes from people who may not live here in Tucson, the involvement to each of your organizations from our neighbors in New Mexico, even our neighbors in Nevada and California and other places. So it's not just about the immediate area, but really the influence that we have coming out of Southern Arizona as part of this great Southwestern region.
There, I mean, there are others, you know, I've reached out to and Benson and Bisbee and, you know, especially, you know, Sierra Vista and some mm-hmm. others that come join this because it's about us. Because when we come together, we can do better. I was at the Cesar Chavez March the other week, and
yes.
I was telling them about.
Mm-hmm. That was just last Monday.
Yeah, and in Mexico, they have a celebration called Dia de los Negros.
Oh.
And it's about Juneteenth.
Because, how wonderful.
Because a lot of the free people who left, they went to Mexico.
Yes.
And so that connection, if you don't, people don't know that, right? If you don't get to educate them about that, they don't know.
And what a great way to bring many different cultures together,
right.
even our indigenous cultures. And
right.
anything, in my view, we're sitting right here in a binational region.
Right.
Being able to tie the different stakeholders and folks together is really important. It has been, I can't believe how fast this time has gone. It's been a full Monday morning. I want to give a shout out to Brendan Kraft behind the glass, who's keeping us on track today. Brendan, thank you so much for everything this morning.
No problem.
And we have been excited on this Rainmakers. Always a great way to kick off the week, to start off your Monday morning early. Dave Johnson, thank you for being here from the Tucson Auto Museum.
It's been great. Thank you.
And Larry, quickly, folks can get in touch with you. We're going to be, as we go off, they can find you at Tucson June 19, the number is 19.org, and learn more about upcoming. And I want to remind folks that we're having another eat and greet so you can meet more more of the personalities and team members who are behind the Morning Voice coming up on April 24th out at, I believe, Reforma Proof and Union House. So please join us for that and enjoy your Monday morning. Gentlemen, thank you again for being on Rainmakers. I'm your host, Lydia Aranda. We've had Larry Starks and Dave Johnson, and wishing everybody a wonderful Monday.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.